Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks very much for listening on Friday, August 1st, 2014. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. My experts in the world of the federal government this week, actually I have one in the studio with me, and I welcome Bob Otto, who is now president of the federal at Agilex. Congratulations on the big promotion.
Thank you. It's I don't know if it's well-deserved, but it's more work. That's all I get out of this.
Well, I can't imagine that there's not a little something extra in the envelope. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I want to shout out to Linda Curitan of Muse Technologies, a former CIO at NASA, who was to be our other compatriot on the countdown. She could not be with us, and we are looking very much forward to having her come back on the countdown at a different time.
Yeah, I was hoping that we could debate some things.
You and Linda. Well,
yeah.
That's what I was looking forward to, too. But, you know, it is what it is. And we look forward to having her come back. And we are going to start where we always do at
number three.
And, Bob, your choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from Government Computer News. It's Karen Schwartz's story, which is titled Four Tips for Shared Services Success. Certainly not the only four things that somebody needs to do to be successful at shared services, but the concept of shared services and just buying into it is one that we kind of get to in some of the things that are listed here, but it strikes me that's the most important one, and I'll tell you a story why in just a moment. But that idea of just being on board with it seems to be one of the biggest obstacles to overcome, right?
Absolutely. So I like the story because in my career I got to build shared services for the U.S. Postal Service. And that included the finance shared services and human resource shared services. And, you know, one of the nice things about this is you get consistency and you get quality and you reduce significantly the costs. And I can't understand why a lot of the government agencies don't help and support having shared services used across the government. I don't know what the reason is for it.
But you know what the reason is for it.
Well,
don't you?
Everybody wants to reinvent their wheel.
And everybody wants to own everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big hang-up, isn't it?
But we're coming into an era now where you have to basically have predictable quality services. And you can't reinvent the wheel in every federal agency. I mean, there's a time and a place for unique things, and this isn't a unique thing. And so leveraging the good services across government, we ought to do that. It's just good common practice. But, you know, when you're building services, these shared services, most organizations look at it and they say, I've got these 10 type of services I've got to plan for. And that's what they budget for and they put in place. They don't think about, well, let me think about 5 years from now. If I'm going to offer services to others, what should it be? Maybe it's 20 services.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of those tips that she was sharing in all of this was that you need to really think ahead about the future requirements. And this is one of the things that, again, people have a short view of what they should be doing.
The four tips for shared services success in this piece are test for outliers, check key performance indicators up front, look outside the box, and start with clean data, and we'll talk about each of those in turn. This is the story I wanted to share with you. A chief information officer at a bureau level at a civilian agency, I asked him about shared services not too long ago, and he said, yeah, we will look forward to being the shared service provider for the other bureaus inside the agency. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure that's probably the vision that the cabinet, or the agency level CIO has for the agency. So there are, even within an agency, even once you have the buy-in, yes, shared services are a good thing. Yes, I don't have to own everything. There are still varying degrees of vision and collaboration that people see, which I imagine could be the next obstacle after the buy-in part.
I think the first thing is an agency has to have a good set of services. And if you have a basic good set of services, now you can start thinking about, can I offer this to other agencies and make money for your agency? And, you know, a lot of people don't really, their self-assessment of their own services sometimes falls short of what really is what they deliver.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the essence of the second point in this piece, which is check key performance indicators up front. And Karen Schwartz writes in GCN, at the Department of Interior's Business Center, which manages large shared services in the areas of finance, human resources, and acquisition, the process of reviewing the performance of shared services is ongoing. And Joe Ward's been on the show a number of times, and he's said here, they're constantly looking at making sure that they're not just providing shared services, that they're really providing a service to the customer in not just there are a couple different definitions of service. And I think when a lot of people think about shared services in government, they think of, well, we do whatever of those things, acquisition, we do human resources. That's not the kind of service that Joe is talking about, and that's not what I'm referring to. The service is, what do you, the customer, Bob Otto at the Postal Service, for example, need me to do for you? And so I'm going to provide you with that, whatever it is. And that's the part of it that I wonder if shared services providers in government are thinking about as much as they could.
I think what they do is they optimize their service, and then they want to offer it to the rest of government. But if they're not always constantly looking at improving it and finding innovations with it, well, it's easy to get obsolete very quickly. So a lot of are these agencies that want to get into shared services, I think they ought to look around and see what is their unique set of service offerings. And honestly, there's some things that when I was at the Postal Service, I didn't want to do because I could go buy it as a commodity and somebody else was doing a better job than I could have ever done, even putting a lot of money into it.
That seems to be the biggest driver for the CIOs and the other people in government who are receptive to shared services and procuring them from somebody else, is they don't want to own this stuff. And the proliferation of fill in the blank as a service is making that a lot easier, isn't it?
Yeah. Any manager who thinks that they get to a point and I've got a service and it's really good and that's it is missing the boat. This is a journey. This is constantly changing and improving all the time and asking your customers and going out and researching what is the next things that are needed. If you're not doing that, you're really going to get behind really quickly.
The piece from GCN that you chose for your third most important federal news story of the week on the countdown, Bob, is kind of a profile of Mike Upton at the Transportation Department's Enterprise Services Center. He is now at the FAA. He is deputy director of the Enterprise Services Center there, but this piece is focused on a lot of his experience at transportation. Under the first one, test for outliers, this piece says, Upton learned it's important to gather requirements outside of ordinary functions from a potential set of users and choose a platform that can accommodate as many of them as possible. That's kind of what I was getting at a moment ago about providing a service, small s, to your customers by understanding what do they need. If you need something, that it's a whole lot easier for somebody to provide that in a scenario when they have a sense of what your requirements are and what your options are to procure that right now.
So if you're at DOI or you're at FAA and you offer these shared services within your own organizations, you have a good handle of what they need. But if you're going to then offer this across to other federal agencies, you're going to have to go out to those managers and see what unique things they do to see if those are services you want to offer.
The third most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Ottos from GCN. The headline is Four Tips for Better Shared Services. Karen Schwartz from GCN writing that. It and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown, linked later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important federal news story of the week on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Otto from Agilex. Bob flying solo this week on the countdown, and we are up to
number two.
Your choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is from FCW, and that's Colby Hockamuth's story, headlined a $300 million IT flop. And these are the kinds of stories, Bob, above and beyond what happened at the Social Security Administration. These are the kinds of stories that make the general public and members of Congress in particular just kind of roll their eyes and go, here we go again. I will say, I think there's maybe a silver lining to this dark cloud, and we'll get to that in a minute. But what jumped out at you about this story about the disability case processing system, a report by McKinsey, and the problem at SSA right now?
Well, you could, first of all, this could be any agency. And, in fact, if you go back about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a lot of these projects that get off the track in many agencies. And there's some people like even Roger Baker who, when he came into VA, he took a look at a lot of the projects there and he stopped a lot of them because it didn't make sense to continue on with things that maybe the requirements change or maybe the customers changed in all of this. But at the end of the day, these large and complex projects that span multiple years, they're just like a recipe for this high chance of failure or not meeting the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what this really looks like to me.
That's what I took away from this. As Colby writes here, the project was conceived to replace 54 separate components used in SSA's disability determination system. And I mean, that if nothing else about this screams complexity, mm-hmm. that does to me.
I mean, think about, you're going to take 54 disparate things and put them together. I mean, it would probably make sense if you did this in an agile way where you started to look at some of the low-hanging fruit here and a couple of the systems and modernizing and putting them together and then take a few more in doing these in phases and sprints. I mean, that then the customers would have started to see some results and deliverables, and they wouldn't be waiting 6 years for this. I mean, think about this. I'll bet you the customers have changed in 6 years. I'll bet you the SSA's IT people have changed in 6 years. And everything, when all that stuff changes, you're now looking at, well, I was building for something 6 years ago, and it's 6 years later. Does this business really need this?
The thing I think is most frustrating for people who look at this from the outside, though, is, I mean, I've talked on any number of occasions on this program, not just to you, but to people all across the federal IT space. People, witnesses have told congressional committees, there are best practices in place to avoid these. And at some point, how do you go to somebody and say, we didn't follow the best practices that are in place and universally accepted, you know, one owner who delegates authority and all of it, you know them all. How do people keep making the same mistakes over and over again, Bob?
Well, throughout my career, we've went through different methodologies of development. And if you think back 6 years ago when this would have started, or 7 years ago, the customers would have been putting together reams and reams of requirements, and they would have been using this waterfall technology. And, so that whole methodology in itself says, I'm going to hand you as a customer my requirement, and someday as an IT, you'll deliver something. And that isn't, you know, the Agile wasn't then available or even practiced across the government very much. And now most of the agencies look at it as, I'm not going to wait years to deliver to my customer products. What I'm going to do is, in a month or a couple months, I'm going to show them first releases so that they can start to see working parts of their systems. And then they start to have confidence that in a couple more months, they start to see more stuff. And so you build that rapport, and that's really what's needed. So that they don't wait years to see and spend millions of dollars to see a result.
This story says, throughout the past 6 years, the project's been stuck in the beta phase. According to McKinsey, the contractor that SSA procured to do a report for them on this, for the past 5 years, release 1.0 is consistently projected to be 24 to 32 months away.
Wow.
you're the CIO in an agency, not picking on SSA.
Sure.
You have somebody consistently telling you that. At what point, maybe sooner than 6 years and $300 million in, do you put your foot down and say, nope, that's not going to work anymore. We need a different result, or we need a different contractor on the job?
Well, in any agency, there isn't just one project going on at a time. So if you're the CIO of most of these agencies, you have somewhere between 50 and 100 projects ongoing. Some of them are $1 million, and some of them are $100 million. And they all shouldn't have the same importance, but your staff, your management, your program managers are all reporting on progress. And as long as there's progress happening, it usually doesn't raise the issue to the customers and the CIO. But you get to a point where if you don't start seeing deliverables, then you should be raising flags internally about this stuff.
I mentioned that I think there's a silver lining in this cloud. And that's exactly the silver lining, because this did not come about as the result of an inspector general investigation. Mm-hmm. It didn't come about. We didn't learn about it because of a congressional hearing where Ms. Colvin, the administrator candidate nominee for Social Security, was called before and browbeaten because of the failure of this. SSA commissioned this study by McKinsey themselves, and they, when they got the results back, they released the results of it themselves. That's pretty rare in the environment we live in today, Bob. And I think the agency deserves some credit for saying, hey, wait a minute, this didn't turn out the way we wanted it to, but here's how we intend to turn it around.
I think it's any time that an agency looks at their own stuff without having someone tell them to go look at it or their own OIG, I think that's the first great step in trying to recover on what's going on. I mean, Agilex is a company that comes in with projects like this and helps out by bringing our agile methodology in, our teams of people who understand how to do things very quickly. And, you know, for a project like this, this would be a great challenge for us. I think that one of the things that got me about this story and sort of caught my eye was, there was a comment in here about someone said that Silicon Valley startups are better than defense contractors. You know, personally, I think this is nonsense. I mean, you know, there's good companies and there's bad companies in the commercial world and in the government world and state and local, et cetera. You know, at the end of the day, it's the skill sets that you bring as project managers and the project teams on whether they can deliver, they can manage, and whether you're going to have true transparency of what's going on in the project.
Here's the quote that I think you're referring to. This is from Greg Gershman, who's co-founder of AdHoc LLC, a technology consulting company focused on helping improve government's approach to IT projects. And this is the quote. You have companies like Lockheed. They're not web development companies. They don't do work in the private sector. They're not building startups. There's very little in the market that forces them to adopt new technologies. I guess I would think that it's not maybe an issue of the market forcing them, the broad market forcing them to adopt new technologies. It would be a case of the customer saying, this is the solution that we want, and this is how we'd like to get to that solution. And now you show us how you're going to go about doing that. And if the customer is asking you to adopt to some new technology, whatever it may be, then that's what the contractor supplying that service would be expected to do, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I've been around Lockheed and seen some of their work and everything, and they adopt new technologies. I mean, this the comment really, the person doesn't really understand. And, you know, the comment's sort of out of context. But at the end of the day here, again, this project was a huge project, complex project. And somebody at the beginning should not have really taken the 54 systems and said, let's just make this all happen. They should have logically put things together and did components of this and built it along the way.
Bob Otto's second most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. It's Colby Hockamuth's story, headlined a $300 million IT flop, and you can find it and all of our stories on the countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Otto, and a few other observations, too, on this week's Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Thank you. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Otto of Agilex, our friend Linda Curitan of Muse Technologies, the former CIO at NASA, scheduled to be with us and couldn't make it, and we'll look forward to having her come back on a future Federal News Countdown. Meanwhile, we are at
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Bob Otto on this week's Federal News Countdown is actually an editorial from Steve Watkins of the Federal Times. The headline is Innovation, a Measure of Leadership. And he starts it out by saying, everyone complains about the lack of innovation in government. Few people do anything about it, but don't blame federal employees or managers. Blame their leaders. And what I think Steve says very eloquently there, Bob, is there's a big difference, not just in the federal government, but everywhere. There's a big difference between managers and leaders, and separating the two is really key if we're serious about all of the innovation talk that we hear people doing about what's going on in government.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, leaders are critical if you're going to implement innovation and foster it within government. And if you want it to flourish, you're going to have to be a leader who basically takes the whole process for innovation and projects and streamlines it so that things don't get hung up. I mean, somebody asked me the question of, so what's the process for implementing or fostering an idea, and I say, well, you know, I can tell you what it is because every agency is a little different. It's called bureaucracy, and in some agencies it's like 22 steps to get something from a concept to where it gets approved, and in other agencies where the senior management direct that you streamline this and they get behind it, like Gates did on this. Then you now have something that gets done timely and they see that there's a need for it. And, you know, it's just a faster way of doing things.
Steve references a passage from the Bob Gates book, Duty, a chapter called Waging War in the Pentagon, where he describes the fact that the bureaucracy there is so difficult that he writes more often success. He says, requires bypassing that bureaucracy and regular procedures and running the effort directly from my office. And Steve takes that to the next step and writes about Rachel Foster, the chief innovation officer at the Defense Health Agency. And Steve writes, her strategy is to pull promising ideas from the field and then boot them up to the top leaders in military health for approval to pilot them, and if successful, diffuse them. And that's a strategy that we've seen not just in IT, but in all kinds of policy areas all across the current administration. The Obama administration has not been shy to plant seeds at various agencies, maybe not of the same type, and see which one grows and see which ones grow healthy and are scalable. And that, from what I am told by folks who have been through this experience, fosters innovation in places where innovation might not have happened, because it's the leadership at OMB and it's the leadership in the White House saying this is very important to us and we want to make sure this has an opportunity to try to grow.
Well, if there's 100 things that have to be done and you as a leader prioritize and tell your staff you're behind these one or two, it gets a different emphasis than the other 98 do. And some people look at this as when a leader gets behind an initiative that they're micromanaging. They're trying to push it through. Well, when I was at the Postal Service for like 7 or 8 years, I had hundreds of things that needed to be done, and I wanted to push a lot of stuff. So I got involved in it. And I can relate to Robert Gates here and getting behind some of this stuff, because when I got behind it, just because I said it from a top down, it seemed to change people's attitudes about how they approached and supported it. And so things got done faster. And I'll bet you every agency is that way.
So then what Steve is getting at is it's incumbent then on leaders to push whatever their items are to make sure that people understand the same thing that your folks did at the Postal Service, which was, Bob's behind this, so this is really important. We better make this happen. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the first thing you do when you see a new CIO come into an organization is you're trying to figure out what their agenda is, because you already have a workload that you probably can't do anyway. And so you're trying to figure out, how do I align with what the new CIO wants or the business wants? And it's just natural that that's what you prioritize because it was coming top down.
I had Joe Klimovich on the program last week or the week before, who is the new CIO at the Justice Department. And he said that was exactly the tack that he took when he went in there. He was coming in behind Luke McCormick, who was very successful as a CIO at Justice. And so Joe didn't feel like he had to do a lot of triage work because Luke had the place in pretty good shape. But the first thing he did was went around and talked to all of the various component CIOs to find out their needs, their priorities, and make it clear to them that that line of communication between him and between he and they was going to be consistently open and consistently a two-way dialogue, not just I'm the CIO at the agency level, I'm going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, both of those guys, by the way, are very skilled guys. And every few years at your in within your agency, if you're there long term, you need to reinvent yourself. You need to go back out and figure out what it is that you do well and what you don't do well and how you focus on what needs to be done. There's a lot of work on everyone's plate as a CIO, and you can't get everything done, but you need to figure out what are the priorities and you need to get behind them. The one thing that frustrates me, Francis, is that I see good people like Terry Takai come in to like DOD, very skilled person, knows what needs to be done. And she comes in and it takes a while to learn a large organization, let's say a year or 2 years. And she's got great ideas and everything. By the time she puts them in place and gets things starting to gel, then they leave. And, you know, unless you're staying in as a CIO for like 5 to 7 years, how do you ever see the things that you direct get to fruition? And that's the thing that sort of frustrates me. I mean, I spent my entire career of 38 years in government, and I got to see those things come to fruition. And I know that people like, you know, the other CIOs, the longer you stay there, the more you can see get done. And everybody doesn't fully understand what the CIO job is, but there are several who, when they scope things out, if they can see them through, great benefits to the agencies.
Well, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people believe that Casey Coleman was so successful at the General Services Administration. Number one, she was good at what she did, and she was very skilled and knowledgeable. But number two, she was just there for a while, and she was able to really lead a lot of initiatives through to fruition and see the results of what all the planning and so on was for.
Every agency has its own complexities, and I could tell you that I could go into an agency now, any agency, and it would probably take me a little over a year to understand. Now, I understand the concept of federal government, and somebody from the commercial world, that's even a bigger challenge for them. But once you figure out what it is that the agency fully does and its capabilities, and then the uphill work that you have, now you can start to strategize, plan, resource, and prioritize. And as a result of that, now you can start to see things executed. Well, now you're 2.5 years into it. And all, by the way, in about the third year, these political appointees are like looking for where they're going next. And I'd love to see this extended where it's beyond terms, because then they can really give benefit back to government.
So is it time to convert, do you think, the CIO positions to career positions and not have any of them be political appointees? Would that help the organizations, you think?
You know, there's arguments either way, but I would just love to see people stay more than 3 years in a job.
Bob Otto's choice for the most important federal news story of the week is an editorial by Steve Watkins in the Federal Times titled Innovation, a Measure of Leadership, and you can read it and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. When we come back, wrapping up this week's countdown with Bob Otto of AgileX on Federal News Radio. Be right back. We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. This week's Federal News Countdown featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Otto of AgileX. And my thanks to Linda Curitan, who did submit her choices for the three most important federal news stories of the week, couldn't join us in the countdown, and we look forward to having her come back in the future. Linda chose my colleague Jared Serbu's story at number three. Industry group calls on White House, not Congress, to lead acquisition reform efforts. Number two was a story from federalnewsradio.com, how Terry Takei shattered the glass ceiling at DOD. We talked about Terry just a couple of moments ago, Bob. And Linda's choice at number one was a federalnewsradio.com story, headline, House Approves VA Healthcare Overhaul. And certainly, Roger Baker, your colleague at Agilex, has some friends still at VA, and they have quite a job ahead of them as that agency works to transform itself in a number of different areas. Let's think about your choices in the context of what not just VA, but any organization that's in a crisis moment has in front of it. Your number three choice was about shared services. Your number two choice was about the crisis point for a program, the disability case processing system at Social Security. And your number one choice was Steve Watkins's editorial from the Fed Times about innovation as a measure of leadership. I think it would not be a big stretch to connect all three of those issues to what's going on at VA and think about all of the leadership issues, especially that leadership piece, and think about what Robert McDonald is up against as he takes over at that agency. What are the common threads there that you would see for somebody in that situation?
Well, Francis, the VA is sort of like the Postal Service. It's a huge agency, and you know, there's a lot of projects going on and a lot of good work that has been put in place and things that have been done over the past few years. And we seem to find that people gravitate to the things that the one or two things that are an issue or a problem, or maybe somebody did something that is not supposed to be done. And I don't have all the facts. And all that. And, you know, while I find it interesting, I also find that there's a lot of good federal employees who are doing the right things. And, you know, we've got a new leader coming in now, and he's going to get more money to help the veterans, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good work that's going on from the VA people today.
One thread that I would connect from your stories to that VA story is we talked about the shared services success. And one of the elements that was cited in that story and that you explained some of your experience about so eloquently was really understanding what the end user needs to do that he or she's not able to do right now or not able to do as well as he or she could if they were able to leverage technology. And that seems to me to be a terrific place, no matter what the current situation is, whether it's a crisis situation like VA or whether things are going along fine and you're just looking how to really serve your customers, your mission better. But that seems to me to be an ideal place to start, especially in a situation like the VA, is really find out the tools, an accurate, honest assessment of the tools that the mission providers have, and then set out a vision for what the mission providers should have and figure out then how you get from one to the other.
You can build a lot of great tools in any agency, and sometimes they're used improperly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, large projects like the VA, and I know that they've been using Agile methodology for successful projects there. Roger implemented a lot of that, and they have project oversight and things such as that. But you know, I think that the shared services, the large project management, all of that is applicable to every agency. And, you know, there just needs to be good leaders who help sort of bring those all together.
An element that complicates matters at the VA is the political element. I had a conversation with a former VA official yesterday, not Roger, who said Congress knew about some of this stuff, and some of this stuff was not surprising. This has been out there for a while. Whistleblowers had been communicating with them. It didn't resonate for whatever reason until now, and so some of the outrage and some of the things that we see are, are a result of that, are a result of the political calculation, not a result of the investigation calculation. And that's unfortunate because that is, I think, a contributor to what obscures the good work that you talked about, and that I'm seeing other people in the government media writing about today, and that I hear veterans talk about. Veterans still like their care very much, and Robert McDonald pointed that out in his confirmation hearing. We've heard that from Sloan Gibson a number of times that he's been on the Hill in the last couple of weeks. Vets, for the most part, who can choose, still choose to go to the VA healthcare system most of the time.
So, Francis, there's a lot of people who come in and run federal agencies, whether it's VA or others, and they can make a lot of money elsewhere. They come to serve in government because they want to do the right things. And what I've seen at VA and other agencies is people are well-intended and they want to help the VA and other federal programs.
We just have a couple of moments left, but in the time that we have remaining, if you wanted to tie together your three stories, you sometimes choose a theme when you come on the countdown, sometimes not. I didn't detect one today. Did I miss anything?
No, I was. I guess I can relate to these because I see myself having done these in my past career.
You've lived them all.
Well, you know, there's another part of this is that when we bring, like the federal government brings in these commercial people like Terry and others, and what they find is that the federal government isn't as screwed up as everybody says it is. There's a lot of really challenging things. Federal career in managing things is actually interesting and exciting. Sometimes, though, the federal employees get bashed for the wrong reasons. And I would like to tell people in the commercial world that there's a lot of benefits and a lot of rewards from, at the end of the day, having accomplished a lot of things in government, and they ought to consider it.
Your choices for the Federal News Countdown this week are on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll post Linda's choices, too, even though she couldn't join us today. And we'll look forward to having Linda Cureton on a future Federal News Countdown. I learned something from your colleague, John Conley, the other day that I did not know, and that is that you and I share an affinity, although you're a lot more immersed in it than I am, for old Fords. Mm. He sent me a picture of your beautiful 1955 Fairlane that is just out of sight.
Well, we had last week we had hot dogs and hot rods out at Agilex, and we've got a lot of cool things for the younger workers, and so we celebrate a lot of things on a regular basis. And so I brought my old Ford out, and it's just an old Ford. But
no, it's not just an old Ford. It's not a clunker. You're making it sound like it's something that just some jalopy that sits in the backyard, Bob. I saw the picture. I know better.
Well, it's pretty nice, but there's some other nice cars that were there, too, as well. And I like taking it out. I like working on old cars. It takes me back to the 50s and, when I grew up, so...
It's a beautiful car. Congratulations on that. Great to have you on the countdown again.
It's always great being here with you.
You can find all of Bob's stories, and you can hear my conversation with him on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.